This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
I always try to use USPS first class package. That's the option that I prefer because it's actually the cheapest option for packages.
We actually just recently negotiated with eBay to come up with a special TurboLister version that looks and acts very close to the TurboLister functionality.
I'm Brian Burke.
And I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace, and this is episode 80. Hey, Brian, thanks for filling in for Alan while he's away this week.
My pleasure, Griff. What's on the docket today?
Well, this week we continue our Renew and Refresh series with a focus on returns and shipping policies.
And who's our guest?
Me.
You.
Yeah, and you're the host for that segment. Sorry to spring this on you in the last minute.
No worries. I'm up for the challenge.
I think you'll do just fine.
And what else is on episode 80?
We're going to talk to John Slocum about his company and the product he offers sellers to help with listing and inventory. You may have heard of it. It's called 6bid. Many of our sellers are very familiar with the application, but we have so many new sellers tuning into the podcast now, I thought it wise to take a dive into what 6bid software can do when it comes to assisting a seller and cutting down listing tasks.
You know, it's interesting. John's been around quite a while in developing tools for eBay sellers. So yes. I'm really interested to hear what he has to say.
It's over 20 years. We talk about that in the episode.
So do we have any questions this week?
Yeah, we do. And we're going to get to them at the end of the episode. So stay tuned.
Well, sounds like we have a lot to talk about. Shall we get on with it?
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. So let's segue into the top story of the week.
Brian Burke here. This week, on our top story, we're taking a closer look at refreshing two main areas of eBay selling, return and shipping policies. For many sellers, these two areas, returns and shipping, can be particularly confounding. Both are unavoidable if one sells on eBay, and managing them, specifically their cost to a business, takes time, trial and error, and tracking. I'll be filling in as host, and Griff will be taking off his host hat.
Let me take that off right now.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's it's off. I can contest.
You can see my balding head right here.
Exactly. I'm not far behind you on that one. I'll be host, and I'll interview Griff about selling on eBay with a focus on how he has adapted his return and shipping policies over the last year. Griff sells on eBay under the user ID Griffville, and he sells mostly apparel and fragrances. Welcome to the podcast, Griff.
What? Me? Welcome?
I know. Do I really need to welcome you? Right. You own it.
Well, you're going to be the hosts for this story. So, you know, sorry, Brian. It just feels a little odd being in this guest chair because, you know, I'm always in the host chair, but there it is.
I think it's because I put those little nails in the guest chair, and that's why it's uncomfortable.
No wonder I'm on the top of my game.
So how have sales been going on Griffville?
Well, they've been going pretty well, but that's because starting last summer, I focused in on really selling at a higher volume and velocity. I had been out of selling for about, I want to say 2 years after Howie had to, you know, I had to start taking care of him.
A lot was going on.
Yeah. So I was doing a lot of home care and there was no time for anything else besides working at eBay. So I looked around my house beginning of the summer of 2019 and said, you know, I'm getting on. And I don't want to drag all this stuff with me when I have to move into smaller one-story quarters someday, you know, senior living. So I made a goal. I saw a fun goal. I'm getting rid of 95% of everything I own, and I own a lot, in the next 4 years, because now the first year is almost over. It was 5 years that summer. So I've been really focused on this, and I've kept up with it pretty well. I have a lot of inspiration from a few friends who come over to help me with stuff, and I'm very thankful for that. So the sales have actually been pretty well.
So 95% of everything you own. So if somebody wants a piece of Griff or what Griff owns.
Yeah, just check it out.
They can check it out.
Not that you won't get any DNA off any of those items. So,
do you plan on selling more?
Yeah, as I said just now, you know, so I'm going to be liquidating all this stuff. And it means constantly ramping up my listing and sales velocity. One of the interesting things is I'm going by category. So I'm getting rid of most of my listed inventory, which are apparel. And shoes. And also, I've talked about it before. I have a huge collection of fragrances I've been collecting for years. And I'm getting rid of all of those. Really, literally keeping maybe 10 to 100. Oh. But there's like 2,500.
So in a way, it's not like kind of, as we call them, casual seller. It's more almost like a business for you right now.
I'm treating it as a business. So I record it as a business. I report it as a business on taxes. I approach every aspect of it as a business.
Given our focus this week is on refreshing our return and shipping policies,
yeah.
How do you view customer return requests, especially with kind of the business mindset?
Well, okay. Even with the business mindset, I got to be honest. When I get an email saying that a buyer wants to return something, I have to admit it, my first visceral reaction is that, oh my God, I've failed the customer somehow. Oh, woe is me, woe is me. I never want a buyer of any of my items to be disappointed. And I always immediately think, I did something wrong. So I'll usually send an email to the buyer offering my apologies for the dissatisfaction, along with a reassurance that, as it says in my listings, I always accept returns, no questions asked, no arguments, plus I always pay for return shipping, so no risk to you. It does affect me for a few moments in a very negative way. So if sellers are listening and they have that reaction a lot, I have it as well.
You know, it's interesting. You have the perspective of, you start with, did I do something wrong?
Yeah.
What about thinking, hey, maybe the buyer is taking advantage of me or doing something nefarious?
I got to tell you, I never really suspect that anymore. It takes a while to adapt to this mindset. So I'll be honest, it's a human nature to assume sometimes the worst in someone, in this case, a buyer. But I got to tell you, Brian, after 24 years of buying and selling on eBay, my own experience shows me that the actual incidence of truly bad buyers, buyers who are out to, you know, nefarious shenanigans, defraud, it's extremely small and rare. This is honest. In fact, in the 24 years I've been selling and buying on eBay, I only had one buyer who was clearly trying to cheat me.
That's interesting. What was the situation?
The buyer was attempting to trade out a broken version of a satellite radio for one that I shipped, which was brand new, sealed in box.
So how did it work out?
Well, the buyer made a return request. By the way, this is about 10 years ago. So this was way before our current managed return process was in place. And I agreed, you know, because that even back then, that was my course of action. But when I got the satellite radio back, it was clearly not the one I shipped. The one I received was definitely used and had scratches and marks, and it had a different serial number. And of course, it didn't work. And I made a point of putting the serial number of the new one in the description and photos.
What did you do?
Well, I took a deep breath. I said, no, 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 don't go to the dark place. Just be calm, be collected. I ceased all communications with the buyer. I actually filed a police report without prompting in San Jose. I think I got to get a record of this. And of course, I asked eBay to step in review because there was a basic return process back then, but it wasn't anywhere near what we have now. I included photos of the serial number, by the way, on the return advice device and the serial numbers that I put in the item description.
And how did it turn out?
Well, in this case, eBay agreed and said I didn't need to refund the buyer. I think eBay may have refunded them, but I don't know that. And I don't know what happened to that buyer.
Just so I understand, you went through our standard process. Like, you didn't go up the channels or—
No. And I don't believe that the people in Salt Lake that were handling this had any idea that I worked for eBay as well.
Yeah.
So I don't think there was any pulling of rank or at all. I just think this was how this case ended.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you do that because that's what I do. And I've always done it that way because I also want to know, how does the system work? It helps me understand what our sellers go through.
Right. But I want to point this out again. This was one incident, again, about 10 years ago, out of the thousands of sales I've made on eBay since 1996.
So you don't let that one incident color, obviously, the way that you think about a buyer who makes a return request today.
Correct. And I've trained myself not to jump to a conclusion. Remember, I come from an Italian-American family where we, by nature, jump to conclusions. So instead, I assume the buyer is making a legitimate request, and that has served me really well.
I think that's a really, really valuable point. What's your current return rate?
Well, so for all four categories I'm selling in right now, if you consider other categories a category, it's about 3.11%.
And you also sell some fashion, correct?
Yeah, I did for a long time sell fashion. But if I break that down, that 3.11, it varies from, I sold a few watches, and my return rate there for, I got 1 out of 9 items back. So that's 11%. Clothing and shoes and accessories has always hovered between 3 and 5%, and health and beauty right now, and that's all fragrances, is about 4%. And then the other categories is 1%.
And where did you find these figures?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So if you're considering refreshing your return policy, you want to know what your current return rate is in Seller Hub under performance, and then under seller level. That link will take you to the page that's called the Seller Dashboard. And if you scroll down it, you can find your return rates there, broken down by category.
So it's interesting. Double digits on one of them.
Yeah.
Are those rates acceptable to you?
Well, I'd prefer not to have any returns. But, you know, in retail, that's going to be highly unrealistic as an expectation. And actually, when I did some research myself, you know, this is about the industry average range for return rates. Although, again, my jewelry one was skewed because I only had 9 sales. And the others are about on par.
Do you think they were ever higher than that before?
Oh no, they were, especially apparel. There was one point a few years ago where they were close to 9%.
When I saw the apparel at around 5%, I thought, okay, that's really good.
That's not bad, yeah.
Any reason why it's gone down?
Well, yeah, because there was a spike, and there was a reason for the spike, actually. And again, this was a few, like 3-4 years ago. So I had a few listings that period of time where there were serious errors in the description that I had missed. And of course, I didn't see this at first, so I wasn't sure. But when I dug in, I found that there were these discrepancies between things like the size I indicated in the title for the shirt and the actual size of the shirt. But other times it was could be like a contradiction about the material. One would say cotton, and then I would say cotton in the description, and the item specific would say polyester. And some buyers would point this out to me in a message prior to purchasing the item, and I was very thankful they did so I could correct the error. But some buyers didn't. And they ended up buying a shirt that was a different size or a different material than what they thought they were supposed to get based on the information I provided.
And so you kind of mentioned how that happened, but I mean, was it you doing it with the item specifics or how did that actually occur?
Well, so I couldn't figure it out at first because I kept looking at these and saying, well, you know, am I getting this old that I'm just becoming that addle-pated and empty-headed? But then I discovered the problem. See, I was creating these new listings for shirts by selecting cells similar for the very last shirt I listed. And then I'd go through and I'd change all the relevant data like size and titles, item specifics, you know, to match the new item. And the problem was, even when you're doing this, little errors still sneak through, especially if I've been listing items for like hours before. And again, getting a little tired. So your eyes get tired, you get a little sloppy in the proofreading, and bam, an error slips through.
So what did you do?
Well, first I stopped using cells similar, and instead I started creating new listings by using the listing template feature.
And that's interesting because a lot of our sellers I know do use cells similar just because there is some pre-filling of information. But unless it's really, so kind of what you learned was unless it's really almost the exact item, there's risk in doing that.
Yeah, I won't do it anymore. I just don't trust myself. You know, I'm not as sharp as a tack as I was when I was younger.
So you talked about templates. You know, where do you go to create those listing
templates?
Well,
if you're in Seller Hub, and most sellers probably have seen this and maybe have just gone past it. If you're in the active listings page and you look for a link that says create listing, and on the next page, there's a box here for creating a listing template. And when you click on that, by the way, it's like listing an item, but you're not listing an item. You're creating a template. You can create up to 50 templates. And I have one for men's shoes. So all of the policies, the category, everything is set up for shipping men's shoes. And men's shoes are never going to be shipped first class. So I can have a policy all set up and ready to go for USPS priority. I have one for women's shoes. I have one for new and sealed box fragrances, one for open box, one for no box, one for sealed CDs, and so on. And for each template, as I said, you can add your appropriate shipping policy and return policy and then fill in much of the data. And that virtually eliminated that problem.
It's interesting. We were talking about returns. Do you change the return policy per templates or just the shipping policies?
So I've consolidated all my return policies into one.
Okay.
I have two.
It's interesting, given how many categories you sell in, down to two return policies is interesting.
So the thing that drives my return philosophy, the strategy behind returns is I do not want an unhappy buyer. So I don't care what the reason is, whether it's something I did inadvertently, my fault, or if it's just you don't like the item, please send it back. Full refund, no risk. I pay for return shipping. You know, that's helped a lot. The only carve out I have for that is for fragrances that are new in a box and sealed. I actually have a separate policy that states that it's kind of like a restocking charge where I'll say, you know, if you return the item and it's opened, I'll take off 25% of the refund. I've never had to use it, but it is a second little policy that sits up there that I can use.
But like you said, you really, in a way, then just have the one.
Yeah.
What about listings that were created before you started using the template?
I thought about that, and I had to carefully and methodically go through my entire listed inventory, which at the time was close to 200 items, and I double-checked everything, including title and descriptions and item specifics. I had someone sitting with me, so there was two sets of eyeballs, and we made sure everything was accurate and consistent and matched the actual item for sale. And again, I haven't had that problem since. And my return rate went down, clothing.
Interesting. Yeah. And then going forward, it's just, now you've just simplified your ability to list.
Using those listing templates has made all the difference in the world. I really don't have that problem anymore.
That's great. So that makes sense. So are you a top-rated seller?
Yes, I am. And as a top-rated seller who offers a minimum 30-day free returns, like I said, I can actually reduce that refund to a returning buyer up to 50%. Again, I will use that one exception and take 25% off the return if somebody sends me back a box that was sealed, because it really does impact the value. But again, I've never had to use it.
And eBay allows and stands by you in these cases?
Yeah, they do.
What about the cost of paying for a return shipping? I know I hear this from sellers oftentimes when I speak to them. You know, doesn't it all add up?
Well, I suppose if a seller has a really high rate of returns on a category of items that are by nature bulky and heavy, yeah, those can be big costs. Return shipping costs for these really do add up, but for most everything I sell, the weight's below 5 pounds. They're not bulky. They fit well within USPS's regular package dimensions. So the costs are overall minimal and easily absorbed by a special calculation.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So if we think about like your free returns policy, because that's the policy that you go by,
yeah.
A lot of sellers believe that's kind of unfair, that buyers can just select item not as described to get around paying for return shipping requirement. What's your take?
I want to say that it's a really difficult issue for eBay because this, I'm not going to take my seller hat off and put my eBay hat on. This is something that we've been working, you know, trying to get our hands around for a long time. And there's really no great solution here. And the reason is because if you start restricting the reasons that a buyer can select, you end up giving a bad buyer experience and they don't want to shop there anymore. The reality is that that's going to happen in some cases for sellers who say buyer pays return shipping. You know, and again, not everything in business for a merchant's fair. You know, there's always going to be some actions a seller can take when a buyer may have clearly selected the item not as described option to avoid paying return shipping. For example, the seller can report that buyer if that buyer shows a pattern of relying on the item not as described option to get around seller stated return policies. When it comes to who pays return shipping, eBay will take steps to prevent that buyer from doing so in the future. But the way I look at it this way, I try to be realistic. Is it really worth my time to go chasing after every transaction where a buyer may have selected item not as described to get out of paying return shipping? I got to tell you, for me, it isn't. And I've discovered over time that the cost my business incurs in the way of extra shipping costs for, by offering free returns are easily recouped by some crafty bookkeeping. And I think that's the second time I've alluded to it, but go ahead.
Well, explain what you mean by crafty bookkeeping.
Okay. If I look at past transactions for, say, the previous year, I can add up all the costs of shipping for free returns to get a total for that period, in this case, the previous year. If my return rates are fairly steady year over year, I can project what my return shipping costs might be for the entire current year. Then, if I look at my sales velocity for this year, I can project out to the end of the year how that velocity should conservatively continue. You know, I don't want to get too over anxious here. And I can get a good estimate of the number of transactions I expect to have for the entire period. Now, if you're following along, here's where the equation comes in. Finally, if I divide the projected cost of return shipping for the current year by the number of total transactions I expect to have for that year, I get an incremental amount that I can add to the margins of all my listings. And I create a separate account in my books. It's a separate column. It says return shipping cost recoup. And I add that incremental amount to every listed item. Now I'm recouping those costs and not worrying about them when a buyer makes a return request. And you'd be surprised how small that amount can be. In my case, it's never more than a quarter.
In essence, what you're doing is you're self-insuring for the cost of returns.
I'm self-insuring. That's correct. Yeah. Now, knowing this, knowing that my costs are being covered by the way I'm self-insuring, it's resulted in changing one of the points about my return policy, and that was to auto-accept all return requests. I don't have to worry about
it. Which actually simplifies things for you.
Big time, yes. I'm going to accept the return anyway, right? Why make the seller wait for me to approve it? Now, I believe that auto-accepting a return request immediately puts the buyer's mind at ease, so that's another benefit. There's not going to be any 20 questions back and forth, no requirements or arguing or negotiations. I stated in my listings 100% risk-free returns, and auto-accepting return requests really emphasizes that point. And I've never had an argument with a buyer. In fact, I've had buyers who then when they message me, they say, you can see it, when they start the return request, they may be a little, you know, on the offense. But then it's automatically accepted, and my communications with them afterwards are always very nice.
Becomes easy.
Yeah, much easier.
Overall, your return policy is pretty straightforward,
yeah.
Customer-based, and easy to understand. So why revisit refreshing it on a regular basis?
Well, there's two reasons. First, to make sure that my shipping cost recoup calculations are keeping up with the actual trends, right? So what if something else I'm missing causes those return rates to spike? I want to make sure that I'm recouping those costs. And based on what I find, for example, my rates could have increased or they could decrease. And in those cases, I might want to lower that amount because it'll help me be more competitive. That's adjusting the amount I have to add to my margins. And I do this every quarter. I'll look at that number and see if I need to change it.
I want to dig into like a specific example. But before I do that, to me, your perspective on returns is about... You've changed kind of like how you think about them,
yeah.
As opposed to, which has then changed kind of what you do. So to me, it's almost like you've accepted that it's reality. Therefore, you don't get hung up on whether it's fair or not. It's just, how do I factor it into my business cost?
Yeah, I think of it like, you know, there are now three unavoidable things in life. death, taxes, and returns if you're a seller.
Some of our sellers would say unfair returns.
Well, whatever you call them. But, I mean, how you position it is how you're going to feel about running a business, I think. And if you're really focused in on thinking that returns are unfair, your selling experience is going to be unpleasant for you most of the time. And it's going to just result in negativity. It's not going to serve your business. It's not going to change anything. Buyers aren't suddenly going to stop asking for returns. By the very nature of the business, buyers sometimes see something, they get it, and they get it home, and they go, you know, it doesn't really work for me. Why would you want them to keep it? You want to make that buyer unhappy?
Exactly. I think it's a great perspective, and you probably spend a lot less time worrying or being angst or angry over a transaction that actually should just be pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
So what about a specific example using your own sales and returns data?
All right. So I've had an unexpected rise in the returns of some of my fragrances, and I wasn't expecting this. And it was slow at first, but then I checked it because, like I said before, my return rate for a fragrance is about 5%. But when I first started getting rid of them, it was zero. And when I looked at the reasons people were returning them, a lot of them, you know, I have very old fragrances that I've collected and stored safely for years. But even under the best of situations, older fragrances can vary by the way they – it's, I don't want to say degrade, but the fragrance changes over time. So someone will get a fragrance and they'll think, well, when I had this 20 years ago, it smelled different. There's something wrong with this fragrance. So I now have to rethink my older fragrances. How do I position them when I'm listing them so that I'm setting buyer expectations about maybe, you know, this fragrance I believe is still good. It may smell slightly differently than what you remember because fragrances do change over time.
Oh, and people's noses change.
But I would never say that.
Agreed.
No, God. Your nose is off, lady. Fragrances have a scent pyramid. So there are top notes, middle notes, and base notes. And the top notes tend to disappear gradually over time, no matter how tightly they're sealed and how keep them in a cool, dark place. So that initial expression of the fragrance may smell a little differently. If you wait for an hour, it smells exactly like the old fragrance, but that's a reality. Yeah. So now I'm thinking what this is doing is rethinking that return policy is not so much the return policy, the description, and putting the descriptions for old fragrances, you know, hey, this may have changed. You can still return it. If you get it and you don't like, you can still return it. But I want to set the expectation that this might not be exactly what you remembered if you bought this 20, 30 years ago.
The other thing that this kind of speaks to is you're taking control of that increasing return policy. So as opposed to saying, oh, buyers are bad, you're saying, what can I do?
Yeah.
So it's in your control.
Well, I can't control buyers.
Right.
I can only control what I do for them.
Yeah.
Right.
So that focusing on the description is in your control.
Yeah.
One of the reasons for us revisiting and refreshing your return policy to make sure that recouping the right amount from your margins to cover the cost of return shipping.
Yeah.
What's the second reason?
Well, the second reason is the one I just gave. It's, you know, I want to monitor rising return rates and determine what could be causing them, just like what I found with the fragrances, right?
Yeah, and that makes sense.
So that's one thing. I'm managing this going forward. I'm just going to have to put this in the description for my older fragrances. And I do have some older ones. You know, sometimes, you know, noses are different. So just, you know, making that policy or that fact more obvious to buyers with the caveat that you still get to return it.
Right. So the buyer actually should feel comfortable purchasing from you anyway because they know they can return it.
Yeah. There's no risk shopping with me. And there's hundreds, if not other sellers, thousands of other sellers on eBay who do the exact same thing because they've come to the same conclusion. It's just not worth fighting this. It's not good for your business. It's not good for your mental health. Much better to change your attitude, change your perspective and say, hey, I want to make my buyers happy. It's not my place to say why they're unhappy. They don't need me to validate their unhappiness. You're unhappy, send the item back and here's 25% off your next purchase from me.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was just on a call with a number of sellers, over 50. We were going through some information with them and there's a chat going on. And one of the sellers from Colorado Springs, she mentioned she was concerned about the auto accept and were we changing that? And we're not. And she was delighted because she leverages it just like you do.
Yeah.
It simplifies her running her business.
You know, because a lot of times if the buyer has made a return request previously and their experience was they had to start communicating with the seller and kind of justifying why they weren't happy, that puts them on the defensive. So the next time they're looking, in fact, I just thought of something I'm going to change in my description. I auto accept all returns. You don't have to negotiate with me. When you request a return, it'll be automatically accepted. No questions asked. Yes, I'm going to put that in my descriptions. Thank you so much, woman from Colorado Springs.
Her name is Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
Anything else to add regarding return policies and keeping them fresh?
Yeah, sort of like you can kind of summarize, every seller should visit their returns page in Seller Center, if only to use the really nifty return cost calculator we put in the page. You know that formula I gave? We've actually created a calculator on Seller Center where you can actually make these calculations easily. And you can see it if you just go to Seller Center and then click the link for returns. By the way, you get to Seller Center, that link is on the bottom of most every eBay page. So check it out. And one more thing I haven't talked about, Brian. Don't be afraid to test. This is my mantra for the last 15 years. Too many sellers I speak with tell me they won't consider a different, more customer-focused return policy because they are certain doing so is going to result like in a higher rate of return requests. The actual research when it comes to returns shows otherwise. That is, a merchant who offers a buyer-focused return policy usually will see a boost in business as opposed to a boost in returns, since buyers tend to gravitate towards the purchasing option that offers the lowest form of risk to the buyer. Test it and see if it's going to work for you, but don't make that assumption. And that's the moral of the story. Don't assume the worst. Test a policy. Change for yourself. And you're more likely than not to be pleasantly surprised. You'll get in a good habit.
Yeah, I would agree. And that testing component is really something that is easy for sellers to do within the eBay marketplace. We've got 182 million buyers across the globe. And your ability to take 5 or 10% of your listings, let's say I know some sellers who still, they have no return policy. Yeah. They say, I won't accept returns.
Yeah, good luck.
And so they end up getting high. The conversations I'm always having with them is they're complaining about an item not as described claim. They've force the hand of the buyer who doesn't want the item or it doesn't meet the buyer's needs. And remember, the buyer doesn't hold it. They're looking at an image in your description. And so you're going to have some returns. And if you're worried about if you offer returns, what's going to happen to your return rate? Take 10% of your inventory, offer returns, and see how do they sell compared to the 90% that don't, and what's the return rate.
And can you recoup the cost?
And can you, right. That's right. Your point about factoring it in.
Right.
That's
very important.
Really good. Yeah. All great advice. Let's move on to shipping policies.
Okay.
Have you recently refreshed your shipping policies?
I have. And in fact, I'm always tinkering with the shipping policies, but not just the policies I set up for listings, you know, because rates change and the dimensional requirements, new dimensional weight things happen. Not that I sell a lot of heavy stuff, but I do occasionally. But I think also when I talk about shipping and refreshing, it's also about operations. And most importantly, and this is what I want to focus in on shipping, is packaging.
Why packaging?
I'm always looking for ways to save money, Brian, when shipping, while at the same time, I don't want to compromise the shipped parcel's integrity. You know, it has to keep the item intact. With packaging, it's a matter of finding this right balance between saving money by using as little packaging and therefore not increasing the weight of the package by too much, but at the same time using enough packaging and fill to ensure that the item arrives to the buyer safely intact.
It's interesting. I'll use a quick example here.
Sure.
I sold an antique wall clock. I think I probably overpacked it because I was so paranoid that the wood and the glass were going to get damaged.
Did you pay for shipping?
I paid for shipping and I paid for the packaging. But I was, you know, it was going across the country and I just wanted to be sure. The feedback that I got was it arrived safely and it was best packaged item the person had ever received. But that told me that I probably went overboard.
Right. And I think there are cases where you're going to go overboard and it's usually going to be those items where you've never shipped before.
Yes, and I never shipped it. I mean, it was the only one.
Right. So I've been shipping fragrances and cameras, for example, and shirts for a long time. And so I've learned over time how to pack these to keep them intact, their structural integrity, but at the same time save me money.
Can you give an example using an actual item where you've done this?
Sure. I always try to use USPS first class package. That's the option that I prefer because it's actually the cheapest option for packages. Now, I sell a lot of men's shirts and I also sell fragrances. USPS first class package is available as a shipping option on eBay for any parcel that weighs up to 16 ounces or less. And these rates are, like I said, much less expensive than USPS Priority. And the delivery speed is pretty much comparable to Priority. USPS First Class Package also provides tracking. So it meets all the needs for everyone, you know, for your seller performance, for the buyer, and for the seller. Now, most of my shirts and fragrances I've discovered with some trial at Eric, I can package them in a way that keeps them safe during transit while not going over the 16-ounce limit. So I can take advantage of these USPS First Class Package lower rates.
Makes sense. What if you have a shirt that weighs close to the 16-ounce limit? How do you ship that and keep the shipping cost as low as possible?
You know, it's a great question because sometimes, this is rare, but I might have a heavy flannel shirt that by themselves, without packaging, can be close to a pound. And I always offer free shipping. That is, I fold as much of the actual shipping cost in the item price when I list the item. But sometimes with a used shirt, that gets a little prohibitive. It's going to put you out of the competition. So if the value of the shirt is high enough to absorb the shipping cost, then I'll ship it USPS priority. I'll just list it with no alterations to the shipping. But if the shirt can be neatly folded, and this is the key for me, I don't want to stuff it, can be folded to a size that, say, fits into a USPS flat rate legal envelope, I'll utilize that option because it's going to be cheaper than straight priority. And if it fits, great.
And, you know, it's interesting. I think I've bought a lot of items, shirts on eBay.
And they come in those.
They come in those. Yeah. So I think it's probably a practice that a lot of sellers are using. A flat rate legal size envelope. Is that okay with USPS? I mean, it'd be good for all of our listeners to know that.
Yeah, it's meant mostly for documents. But as long as the flat rate envelope can be closed without adding anything to the packaging, and as long as the envelope weighs 70 pounds or less, yeah, it's okay with USPS. You can put whatever you want in it.
And the flat rate legal size envelope cost is cheaper than priority.
Almost every time. If the buyer lives in the same zone as you, the cost difference may be just a dollar or so. And in those cases, it's up to the seller to determine which packaging option to select. Now, there's one caveat, is that the legal flat rate envelope is made of thin card stock and can be damaged in transit pretty easily. So, for example, on the edges, it can split open by an overzealous toss, like into a shipping bin. So I always try to fit the item into a thin poly mailer before I put it into the legal flat rate envelope to make sure to help keep it safer during transit. Yeah.
And it's interesting you say that because even just like the cardboard, if it gets wet or if it's rained, if it's in the poly mailer, it's also going to keep it dry.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's important. Protecting it from moisture. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get back to optimizing packaging.
Mm-hmm. Let's. Now, in the example I just gave you about the shirt, it's pretty easy, right? I don't need to protect the shirt from breakages because shirts don't crack or break upon impact. At least none of the ones I've ever sold. I guess if you had a glass shirt. But I do need to protect them, like I said, against moisture and also lots of creasing. I like my shirts to arrive really neatly. So I put them in a sealed plastic enclosure that's clear. And I use tissue paper in between the shirt when I fold it, like they do with a new shirt. This provides for very low weight. These things don't weigh that much. But it gives high protection to the shirt. And once you've slipped it into the envelope with that, it tends to stay pretty flat. And if somehow moisture gets on the surface of the poly mailer, it's not going to seep into the shirt.
Yep.
One thing that's important, even with that, always use white tissue paper, not colored.
Oh, how come?
If there is, heaven forfend, any leakage, the color from the tissue can stain the shirt.
Oh, that's interesting.
Only use white tissue when you're packing that way.
See, you know, the things that you learn and when you sell something on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's me.
With all this, do you still get reports from buyers of items damaged in transit?
Yeah, I do rarely. However, even if damage happens, it doesn't happen that often. And when it does happen, I want to know which parcels it happens to so I can determine if I need to change the way I'm packaging those items to help better prevent a future similar item being damaged in transit. And for example, I learned the hard way when I first started selling fragrances that if I'm selling just a bottle, I put it in a heavy-duty Ziploc bag that I bought specifically for those purposes. So should there be any liquid leakage, it's not going to compromise the package. You know, hopefully it won't happen, but, you know, sometimes it doesn't. There's just no way around it.
And that's just an inexpensive extra safety check as you ship.
Yeah.
To summarize, when it comes to returns, look for ways to lower return rates as well as to recoup the cost of accepting free returns by adding a small amount to the item price of all your items.
Yes.
Now, obviously, this is for those sellers selling fixed price. Auction, it's
a little harder. With auctions, I always find if you're selling something at auction, charge for shipping. Don't offer free shipping.
Yeah.
You protect yourself better that way. Because if the item sells for too little, you may be out the item cost and you may be out shipping. And why do you list things on eBay to lose money?
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably free shipping is probably not a good thing with auctions.
That's a good point. And then the other point that you brought up was don't assume but test, which
you
I think is a really important one.
I want T-shirts made with that.
With your face on it.
No, not my face. Your face, Brian. You know, I couldn't have summarized it better myself. Now, remember, the goal is to lower your return rates to the lowest reasonable amount possible. And again, to recoup those costs. And remember the equation. It's the current cost of returns in a period divided by the number of transactions for the same period.
Cool. And what about if you had to summarize shipping?
Look for the lowest classes of service that will meet the needs of you and your buyer. So keep your seller performance up, but get the item there as quick as possible. And look for the best balance between safe packing and lowest cost when it comes to how much packaging you're using, what type of packaging. I didn't mention, by the way, one of the things I hate, and this is just a personal thing, is I hate getting stuff with peanuts in it. I like bubble wrap. I can reuse bubble wrap. Peanuts go everywhere. They're a pain in the neck. And always remember, it's better to pay a little more for shipping if it helps guarantee that the item's going to arrive safely and intact, like you did when you overpacked your clock.
I did, but it was a very happy customer.
It was. So that's it. I thought that went well, Brian.
I agree. That was really educational.
But I'm not the host. You are. So you have to sign us off.
We've been speaking with Griff.
Yeah, that's me.
Whose user ID is Griffville.
That's it.
And he's trying to clear out 95% of the items in his home.
So there was an ulterior motive to this segment.
No, I shouldn't be plugging you plugging your user ID like that.
But it's a shameless plug.
It is. Yes, I hope the information that you shared was really valuable and educational, and I think there were some really good facts in there. So thank you so much for sharing those from 24 years of selling on eBay, which I know some of our listeners probably are close to that as well.
Oh, there's some, yeah.
And I'm hopeful that some of them might even write in or email in or call in some suggestions.
Or be a guest.
Suggestions on what they do or be a guest.
Yeah, we
would be great.
And Brian, you did a wonderful job as a host. Thank you so much.
I had a great teacher.
Yeah, you did. Those of you out there who have been using TurboLister for how many years it's been around, you may have been made aware by eBay that TurboLister will finally be retired, sunsetted, put into the dustbin of history as it is. And for some of you, you may be wondering, what can I use that would replace TurboLister? And for those of you who are not TurboLister users, you may be curious to know about the replacement, because it's actually a piece of software that's been around for quite some time. It's called 6bit. It was created by John Slocum many years ago, and John is joining us to go over what 6bit can do and why it may be a great value proposition for sellers, especially sellers who may list in a moderate to high volume. Welcome, John.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We're glad that you could take time to talk to us about this. Can you give us an idea of exactly what is 6bit?
6bit is basically a tool to help eBay sellers manage all aspects of their business. We help with everything from entering your items and your pictures to submitting listings and then tracking and managing your sales.
So it's not just necessarily a listing tool. It does a little bit more than that.
Right. The listing tool is really just the part at the beginning. It's really just the beginning of the tool. We can help you manage all aspects from keeping track of your inventory. And then once you have sales, hopefully you have lots of sales, we can let you print packing list and postage and keep track of everything that needs to be shipped and when it needs to be shipped.
Oh, postage. I didn't know that 6bit did that.
Yes, we actually are integrating with the eBay postage, so you can print eBay postage right through 6bit.
Wow, wait a minute. This is sounding attractive to me. Let's get a little deeper into this. Never mind our listeners. I want to know. Is 6bit a client desktop application, or is it all cloud-based?
We're a client application. We run on the desktop, and that has a couple of advantages. First, you don't have to be online to use 6bit, a lot like TurboLister. And second, you can keep your data as long as you'd like. It's all stored right on your computer in a database, so you can keep years and years and years of data. And in case you ever have that one item you want to sell again, you can always dig that up and just be ready to list it again.
So like TurboLister, it will archive listings so that you can access them well into the future?
Yep. Keep everything as long as you want.
For those sellers who currently use TurboLister, how might 6bit fill that app gap once TurboLister is actually fully retired and they don't have that to rely on anymore?
Right now, 6bit is really the closest thing out there to TurboLister. So like TurboLister, we're both desktop-based, and we have all of the features currently found in TurboLister. Trust me, I've gone through and done a comparison one for one and matched them all up. So recently, we've actually done quite a bit to create a smooth transition from TurboLister to 6bit. I just finished a series of 3 videos that are aimed directly at the TurboLister user to show them how to set up and install 6bit, and then how to import TurboLister items, and then how to list them with 6bit. And I even went in and created a 1-page quick reference describing where you can find TurboLister features and their equivalents in 6bit.
Oh, this is great. Where can people go to see those videos?
So those videos are on our website, 6bitsoftware.com.
And does 6-bit, by the way, one of the questions I get from people is, yeah, but the other pieces of software don't tend to keep up with like eBay changes. Does 6-bit keep up with changes on the eBay side? Now I'm going to talk about, for example, pricing, item specifics, different new features in the listing flow, like volume pricing and, you know, those sort of things.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things you touched on. One is, on a daily basis, we'll keep up with any changes to item specifics or categories, things like that. But also, from a standpoint of new features, we're part of the eBay Developers Council. So we know in advance when some of these features, these new features are coming. So we have plenty of time to prepare and plenty of time to get those features into the tool.
I'm intrigued. I want to go check out this new version of 6-bit. Where do I go to find out more information?
So you can go to our website. It's at 6bitsoftware.com. We have pages that list all the features, talk about the pricing models and all of that.
Oh, talking about pricing, can you tell us how much does 6-bit cost and how does the pricing work?
Let me just expound a little bit on how 6-bit's organized. We are one big tool, but users can get to different levels of that tool. If you are a TurboLister user and you don't need a lot of the fancy high-end features, we have a TurboLister version. We actually just recently negotiated with eBay to come up with a special TurboLister version that looks and acts very close to the TurboLister functionality. eBay also negotiated a special price for that with us. So that version is our lowest price. That's $14.99 a month. And then after that, if you find later your business grows or you want some more functionality, we have different editions. We have the Home and Hobby Edition at $19.99 a month, Small Business Edition at $34.99 a month, and the Enterprise Edition at $69.99 a month.
Well, those seem reasonable, but I have to ask because, you know, we're always looking for these sort of things. John, is there a free trial period?
Yes, always. So there's a 30-day free trial for anybody who signs up to any of the versions. But once again, we've been working with eBay, and because eBay wants to, you know, help out users with this TurboLister migration. And eBay's actually negotiated with us a special trial for those users that are going to be coming over from eBay. The TurboLister users are going to hear more about that from eBay in the coming weeks.
Oh, so stay tuned. As the weeks go on, eBay will have news about a special trial period offer for transferring over to 6-bit.
Exactly. We've been working with them, and they have some things that are coming down the pike just shortly. I'm not sure how much I should say about that, but I'll stop right there.
I think you've said enough. I'm intrigued, and I don't even know. I'm inside here, and I don't even know what the deal is. I'll have to go figure it out. John,
talk afterwards.
Okay, it's great. John, it's always good to connect with you. I know it's been a few years, and I'm so glad we did. Continued success with 6-bit. Before I close, by the way, how long has 6-bit been around?
We actually were the first listing tool. I started my first version in 1997 as a little tool to help my father-in-law, who's an antique dealer. And we've been through multiple iterations between 1997 and now. I can't even do the math anymore. What's that? 23 years.
23 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is a tool you can trust. John's been around for 23 years. Lots of sellers who use 6-bit speak very highly of it. So stay tuned. You can go to 6bitsoftware.com to learn more and stay tuned on the eBay side as the details of this special free trial promo become more public. That's in the next few weeks. John, thank you so much for stopping by and talking with us.
Thank you, Griff. Always a pleasure.
John Slocum is the founder and, I assume, the president and owner and everything else of 6-Bit Software. We'll also talk to a seller who uses 6-Bit Software to get their take on the product. Brian, this week, we have two seller questions to answer.
Excellent. But just the two?
Yeah, for now, just the two. One was sent to our email address at podcast@ebay.com, and one was called into our voice line at 888-723-4630. Brian, let's do the email first. Will you read it?
Sure. User Steve Bartlett, username brokenspoke-27, writes, "Hey guys, just started listening last week, been listening backwards, and now at episode 69. Great show." I always love that feedback.
Yeah.
"My question is about search results. We have a line of drive belts for rock tumblers. We are top-rated sellers, one-day handling, free shipping, free returns, discount for multi-purchase, and using promoted listings on the belts. Yet our listings show up way down the list when searching via best match. What can I do to get higher up in the search result list?
Okay.
Kindest regards from North Carolina, Steve, Slushy, and Eli." Thanks, Steve. Griff, what do you think?
Well, I think it's important for every seller to know what factors determine placement and best match. And why don't we do that? Let's start with how best match works. So our best match algorithm, Steve, is the formula that eBay uses to sort listing. And it considers a number of different factors. And these include things like how closely the listing matches the buyer's search terms. And I would ask you that question. What were you searching on when you were trying to find your items? How popular the items might be. That is, how many times did someone click on them? The price of the item, of course, because price is a big factor. The quality of your listings. So, for example, descriptions, photos, and so on. And how complete the listing is. Is it missing information like item specifics? And your listing terms of service. What's your return policy and handling time? The better they are, the higher up it can show up in best match. And of course, your track record as a seller matters too. So if you're an experienced seller with no, you know, bad performance issues with eBay, that'll also help you in best match.
There's no secret to improving your position in the best match sort order. Sellers who follow best listing and selling practices will see their items appear higher in the search results. Start by offering competitive prices, reasonable shipping, and great customer service. Here are some other more recommendations for improving your best match ranking.
Yeah, like I said earlier, you want to create complete and accurate listings. And, you know, that means a clear and concise title with no extra words. Make sure the words that are specific keywords are spelled correctly. An accurate description. Use product details from the eBay catalog wherever you can. So if you have a UPC or an ISBN number or some identifier, plug it in, see if eBay will fill that information in. If that's the case, it's going to get you higher in best match. Make sure your photos are really high quality, at best on a white background, but not necessarily all the time. And include as many pictures as you can. And as I said earlier, item specifics, don't leave those out. They're becoming more and more a requirement across several categories. But make sure that beyond the required ones, if there are other item specifics that make sense and are relevant to your item, fill them in.
So select the right selling format.
Oh, yes, that's important, right?
Auction style, fixed price. So obviously with auction style, use it when you're not sure the value of the item you want to sell and you want to sell it quickly. Your item is unique or hard to find. One thing I'll always say about auction style is it's not the winning bidder who sets the price of the auction. It's the underbidder. So you need multiple people. So if you've got a unique or hard to find item, good time to use auction. Mm. Use fixed price format when you know the value of the item or the price you want to get for it. You have multiple items, so you can do multi-quantity or multi-variation listings. Have a lot of inventory and want to minimize your insertion fees and want your items to show up for buyers for more than 10 days.
Yeah. Make sure you list in the right category. So pick the category that's most relevant for your item. That may take a little research on your part, but if you accidentally or inadvertently put it in the wrong category, that can really mess up in a search how it shows up in best match.
And make sure your terms and conditions for sale are clear. Here are some of the things to keep in mind. Include shipping and handling costs, accepted payment methods, and your return policy. Clearly specify any international limits in your return policy or warranties.
Yeah, and finally, keep a positive selling history. Ensure your item reaches your buyer on time and within your promised stated handling time. Use tracking as much as possible. Again, describe your item clearly and accurately. Leave nothing out. And keep track of your inventory in order to avoid having to cancel sales because of stockouts. That's a bad thing that can happen to you. Now, for help in maintaining a positive selling history, we put a bunch of guides up on the site, and I'm going to provide the links to these guides in the episode transcript. You can find the transcript by going to ebay.com/podcast, clicking on the link for episode 80, and then clicking on the link for transcript. You'll see them all there.
So you'll find all these bits of wisdom for optimizing for best match right on our website, specifically using help and contact.
That's right. You just click on the help and contact link and then type in best match into the search box. And the first link that's returned is optimizing your listings for best match. Click it and follow the steps to optimize your listing.
You know, one other thing that I want to say.
I want to thank Steve, by the way, for sending the question.
Yeah, definitely. And one other point that I always like to tell sellers is if you're worried about where you're placing compared to other sellers, take a look at who's in the top slots and see what they're doing. And are there differences with your listings compared to theirs, service levels, shipping levels, all of those things. Don't be afraid to copy your competition if they're doing something different and actually seeing success with it.
Good advice. Thanks again, Steve. Now let's listen to a call-in question. Roll the tape, please.
Hi, my name is Brent. My ID is Island Trade Post. And my question to you guys is, I know eBay had a input field that allowed you to add how much you purchased the item for as part of the final sale. When you closed out the final sale, it allowed you to put that information in. I'm wondering if there's some way to add this in the listing flow or via the eBay spreadsheet upload, the bulk upload. And the reason for this is after a sale is complete, sometimes it's just easier for my accountant and otherwise to have that information within the eBay information as opposed to having to look somewhere else for it. Or if someone sends in a offer that I can pull that information quickly. That's my question for you guys. I enjoy the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
I think I know the answer for Brent.
I bet you do. And the answer is
the custom label feature. Yes.
Brent, you can always use the custom label in the listing flow. It's also shown on the active listing page in Seller Hub. You'll find it when you're listing an item. There's a field on the top. It says custom label. But first, make sure that field is showing in the active listing page as well, because that's a customization of the active listing page that you as the seller can do. You go to Seller Hub, active listings, and then click the customize link. Check the box for custom label and save the setting. Now that field will display in the active listing pages as a column, and you can edit each of the cells from there. And that same field shows up in the create a listing flow towards the top of the page. Now you can use that field for any purpose, including cost of goods sold, which is what a lot of sellers, how they use it. And this field will also download as a column in the new download report feature in the orders page in Seller Hub. So if you're using that field for cost of goods, you can format that row once the report is downloaded for currency and then apply the sum function at the end if you need to know the total cost of goods sold. It's not specifically for cost of goods, but you can use that custom label for cost of goods sold for your recording purposes.
The other thing, I've seen some sellers also use that field in combination with cost of goods, the date they purchased it, because that's a signal for them on whether they should discount or whether they should clear out that inventory.
Right.
So you can leverage it for that too.
If I had to make a request of eBay on the behalf of Steve and myself and many other sellers, I'd want three separate custom label fields that I could
in
customize.
Seller Hub.
Yeah,
and it's some feedback that we've heard, and I know that the Seller Hub team has heard this, and I don't know that there's any date on a solution within Seller Hub, but custom.
But they're aware of it.
Yeah, they're aware of it, and the custom field is a good workaround for right now. Brent, thanks for that question. I hope the answer was satisfactory. Please feel free to call or email if you need more clarification on where to find the custom label feature.
That's all the questions we have this week, Brian. But if you have a question, a dear listener, remember you can call it into our voice line at 888-723-4630.
Or you can email it to us at podcast@ebay.com.
Well, here's hoping we have more of your questions next week because we love answering questions.
Definitely.
Wow, Brian, that's a lot of show in the can for just the two of us.
It was. Hopefully our listeners enjoyed it as much as we did enjoyed making it.
I hope they did. We'll certainly hear from them.
Yes. And if you want to join the fun here on eBay for Business, call us on 888-723-4630.
That number again is 888-723-4630. We're waiting to hear from you. And the best part is you can call that any time of day, any day of the week. Just leave your question or comment. Or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, let us know. And we might put you, your question, or your comment on the air. Who knows?
If you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And every week we talk about meetups, and you know the score if you listen. We love meetups. You'll love them, too. To find a local eBay meetup shindig in your area, visit www.ebay.com/meetups. And if there isn't one in your area, well, you might consider moving, or maybe probably less hassle just to start one of your own. Right.
And everybody I know who goes to those meetups enjoys them.
Of
they learn a lot.
Oh, and the drinking and dancing and carousing and it's great fun.
And discussions of eBay.
Well, that too. Yes, of course. Yeah.
So every Wednesday at 1 p.m., go to ebay.com, community chat, and select weekly chat with eBay staff in the drop-down menu.
Yeah, you can talk with eBay staff.
Yes.
That's pretty good. It's every Wednesday. That's cool. Yeah.
Normally at least two, sometimes three eBay staff members.
Sometimes 20. Well, Brian, that's it for this episode. Why not join us next week for another episode of the eBay for Business podcast? Many thanks to my co-host this week who went above and beyond the call of duty, Brian Burke. Let's hear it for Brian.
Thanks, Griff. I know that Alan's supposed to be back next week after a couple weeks of holiday. I'm not sure I'm going to let him back in this chair.
Well, that's between the two of you.
It's been a pleasure, Griff.
And mine as well. I'm Griff, and we'll see you next week. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.